Chapter 9. My crew and I stepped carefully over the bodies of the fallen monoflock birds, and we approached the lime-green bush that acted as the entrance to the spindrel home. Once we were at the foot of the glowing, wide piece of flora, Pei began to wander along its edge until she stopped at a seemingly random spot near the center. The silver-haired woman then crouched down, placed both of her hands into the brambles of the bush, and fumbled around for a moment before she spread the foliage apart.
"Here we go,"
Pei announced.
"Through this hole, you will find the home of the spindrel people. We hope you love it as much as we do."
"Anything's better than out here,"
Ashanti grumbled.
"Surrounded by bird corpses."
"Don't worry about those,"
Valeya noted.
"They will be returned to the land soon enough." "What, are their friends going to come back and eat them?"
Nadir asked with a sharp grin.
"Because if so, I want to be there to watch."
"No,"
the blonde hedgehog woman shook her head.
"But the lumino plants and the tiny, tiny creatures inside the soil certainly will."
"Hold on,"
Fiora gasped.
"Are you saying all these plants eat living creatures?"
"Not the living ones,"
Valeya confirmed.
"They won't hesitate to devour a dead one, though. I promise you, most of those bodies won't even be out here the next time we emerge. Their flesh will be munched on by the tiny creatures in the dirt, and once those creatures have had their fill, the lumino vines will wrap around the dead bodies and pull them under the soil. Once that happens, any remaining bits will be absorbed into the plant's roots and make the luminos even more lush and vibrant."
"Damn. This is taking the term worm food to a whole new level."
"I still think you're full of dirt,"
Shala snorted.
"Claiming there are small creatures in the dirt we can't see. If we can't see them, then why should we even believe you that they exist?"
"You really should stop doubting my ability to commune with the land, Shala,"
Valeya sighed.
"I know they're there because I can sense their auras, just like I can sense yours."
"Oh yeah?"
Shala raised an eyebrow and then stuck up her hand in what I assumed was a rude spindrel signal.
"What sort of aura am I giving off now, then?"
"Not a very nice one,"
the blonde hedgehog woman frowned.
"Especially in front of our guests. Please."
The woman with the spiked black hair waved her hand dismissively.
"I doubt our guests believe in that sort of rubbish either. What do you think, Draco Rex? Do you believe there are a bunch of tiny little creatures in the ground we can't see?"
Yeah. Back in my world, we call those microorganisms. They were super, super tiny to the point where you needed a special tool called a microscope to see them. Valeya's thick lips curved upward into a hearty smile as she crossed her arms and gave Shala an amused glare. Shala's face fell completely when she heard my words, but she simply shook her head in disbelief.
"This goes deeper than I thought,"
the hedgehog woman teased.
"This just won't do. I'm going to need to spend some educational time alone with the Draco Rex to pick his brain and see how far gone he really is." "Not the only thing you'll be picking."
Alvi smirked slightly, though her eyes remained cold and distant. It was actually kind of unsettling to see, since it made the brunette woman look like a frickin' Stanley Kubrick villain.
"Why, whatever do you mean?"
Shala nudged Alvi with her elbow.
"I just want to get to know him a little better." "Enough, Shala."
Pei rolled her eyes.
"I know none of us have been touched by a man in years."
"Ew, mama!"
"Sorry."
The Magnus Dew chuckled.
"I know none of us have had the companionship of a man in years, but please calm down. We don't need to make our guests feel any more uncomfortable than they might already be." "Why wouldn't I make him feel uncomfortable?"
Shala giggled.
"If he's uncomfortable, then he's going to need somebody to make him comfortable. Somebody with awesome black spines whose name starts with an S." "Shala!"
Pei grumbled.
"Enough." Okay.
Shala put up her hands and conceded. But then she shot me a wink.
"For now."
My heart skipped a beat, and I felt a rush of blood to my cock. Maybe if we were both lucky, she'd get the alone time with me that she kept talking about. But for now, we needed to get rested and recovered from the horde we'd just endured.
"How is Charon and Tyrion going to get inside?"
Morella questioned as she walked up to Pei.
"That doesn't look like a large entrance."
"It's a lot bigger than it looks,"
Kaelan declared with his hands on his hips. Morella let out a slight giggle at Kaelan's comment, and the hedgehog boy's eyes went wide. His face turned as red as Swaer's fur when he realized the implication he had just made, and he sputtered as he tried to recover.
"What my son means is this is just a small part of the entrance,"
Pei said, as she fought back a smile.
"This formation existed long before my people were even here, and its mouth widens by the season cycle. Come and see."
With that, Pei beckoned for us to follow her into the bush, and then the silver-haired woman crawled through the foliage, followed by Morella. Kaylan attempted to go right behind my daughter, but I shut that shit down before it even got started. As he got down onto his knees to go through the bush, I stomped over to his position, crossed my arms, and stared down my nose at the guy. "I should make sure my daughter gets through safe," I announced somewhat snarkily. "You don't mind, right?"
No. No, sir. Of course not. Go right ahead.
That's what I thought. I got down onto my hands and knees, pulled apart the branches of the bush, and then began to shuffle forward through the neon green light. The bristly branches of the hedge were sharp against my body, but it was honestly nothing compared to the hundreds of beaks and talons that had just been swiping at me left and right. After only a few seconds of crawling, the ground below me started to slope downward. The pathway was pitch black, though the radiant lime-green glow from the bush's leaves helped to light the way. I could see the outlines of Morella and Pei in front of me, and I watched them descend further and further downward, until eventually the crawl space opened up into the mouth of a cave. When I finally reached the opening, my jaw hit the floor. The entrance to the spindrel dwelling was at least 100 feet tall and equally as wide. Beyond the opening was a massive open cavern decked out with multiple floors, with a giant waterfall that ran down the back wall and then pooled into an underground lake at the bottom of the cave. Several lumino-plant roots hung down from above, and their bioluminescence acted as a sort of natural chandelier as they illuminated the space with their neon light. The space was a fairly open concept, with the underground lake as its focal point, though I could see from afar that the back wall was littered with doorways carved into the side of the cave. Those must have been the spindrel women's rooms. However, there were over 100 doors, and there weren't anywhere close to 100 spindrel women. This led me to the awful conclusion that, much like the other islands we'd been to, something horrible had happened here. Was it the orcs again? They said on their map that this island was empty. Then again, maybe they called it empty because they'd ransacked the whole place and killed everyone. Or maybe we were dealing with a Morpho or Chero women case, where the men either weren't around often, or they'd never existed in the first place. Either way, it was a topic I was sure was sensitive, and I didn't want to bring it up myself. One by one, the rest of the group funneled into the cave. Charon had a bit of a hard time trying to get Tyrion through the hedge, but with a little bit of elbow grease and some heaving and hoeing from my crew, we were able to get both of them down into the cavern. Thank God they were both adolescents. There was no way we'd have been able to get a full-grown dragon through that crawl space.
"Wow,"
Jonas breathed as he marveled at the space before us.
"I have seen some truly beautiful places in my day, Draco Rex, but this one is perhaps the most beautiful of them all."
"I believe it. I'm going to go out on a limb here and say I've 100% never seen anything quite like this, even on all of my travels with the Guard. I mean, the Cliffs of Dover or the Aurora Borealis were definitely up there, but this is something else altogether."
"One question, though,"
Awara interjected.
"If you say those lumino roots bring dead bodies into the ground and then digest them, and you have several dozen lumino roots hanging from the ceiling of your cave, don't you see that sign up there?"
Ura wrapped her arm around Awara's shoulder and pointed up to a part of the wall where words had been etched.
"It clearly says, watch for falling corpses. So, you just sit around with dead bodies on your ceiling frequently?"
The orange-haired butterfly woman gulped.
"Oh, yeah,"
Ura continued.
"It's a common thing. Sometimes we even go so far as to name them, and we make bets as to when they'll finally be released by the roots and come crashing down into the lake."
Awara was obviously disturbed by the hedgehog woman's comments. She tried to play it cool by wearing an expression of faux interest, though her lifted eyebrows and wide eyes made it clear she was a bit unsettled by the concept.
"Wow. You really take this seriously, don't you?"
"You know she's just teasing you, right?"
Erel snickered.
"I can't even remember the last time there was a body on any of those roots. And even then, it was just a small animal and not a person."
"It has happened, though."
Alvi nodded firmly.
"When the virus came."
"Virus?" I asked, though I regretted being so informal the second it slipped out.
"The virus."
Pei lowered her head and sighed.
"I supposed we were going to have to tell you about it eventually."
"Wait a minute!"
Mira gasped, and she looked around frantically as she stepped away from the spindrel women.
"Are we in danger just from being here?"
"No, no,"
Pei promised.
"The virus is long gone. At least, we think it is. It hit us nearly 20 season cycles ago and has shown no signs of resurgence since.
If you don't mind me asking. I prodded a bit further as I pointed to all of the doors in the cavern wall. Is that what happened to all of your people?
It is.
The Magnus Du held herself across the chest as she looked up with tearful eyes.
It's the reason our species is next to doomed.
It was particularly deadly for the males of our species,
Valeya explained, as she leaned against her double-sided stick.
Sure, it wiped us out by the hundreds, men, women, children alike. But when a male spindrel caught it, they often asked to be ceremoniously killed before they developed the symptoms.
Tambori's tusks,
Batari whispered.
How awful. That's why when I was told I was pregnant with a boy, I nearly lost all hope.
Pei admitted.
Thankfully, the gods smiled upon me, and Kaelan was the first male spindrel who was immune from the horrors of the virus.
So, does that mean you are all immune?
Theora questioned.
Or did you all just get very lucky?
As far as we know, we survivors are immune,
Valeya confirmed.
Unfortunately, we realized this far too late. By the time we were able to get out there and safely remove those awful death sprayer plants, most of our species had been wiped out.
Did you just say plants?
Awara questioned with a frown.
Plants caused a virus that killed most of your species? It's the truth.
Pei confirmed.
We don't even know where they came from. One day, while we were out on a scavenging mission, we ran into this strange, bulbous plant that looked nothing like the rest of the luminos or bushes we'd seen before. Small plant.
Alvi estimated the size with her hands.
Glowing red, shaped like an egg. A crater-filled egg.
Of course, one of our oh-so-intelligent men decided they wanted to check it out, which unleashed a deadly spray into the air and began this whole nightmare.
Yeah, you don't go around messing with strange new egg-shaped objects. That's like sci-fi no-no rule number one.
Once it was released into the air, we started finding more and more of the plants growing across our land. We tried to leave these ones alone, but it was no use. Once it came to a certain point in the season cycle, they all opened up and released their toxin into the air anyway.
Toxic pollen. There isn't much of a way around that, unfortunately. Plants need to spread their pollen to continue thriving as a species, even if their seed is toxic to other creatures. The only way to keep a plant from blooming like that is to completely remove it from the equation.
Which is exactly what we tried to do,
Aurel interjected.
The six of us went out and began to tear out any of the egg-shaped plants we could find, including Pei, who was ridiculously pregnant at the time. So, if you were pregnant with Kaelan 20 season cycles ago, that makes him...
Mirella calculated out loud.
A whole lot older than me.
Gross.
Charon muttered to everyone who could communicate with her.
They didn't start destroying the eggs until nearly 10 cycles later.
Kaelan jumped in.
And a spindrel pregnancy lasts for 2 season cycles, so, like, really, we're just about the same age, because you're...
If you want to go by real time, I'm only about 3 season cycles old.
Mirella shrugged.
But you look older than me,
Kaelan gasped. A dragon can mature to adulthood much faster than any other race, I explained with a somewhat smug grin. She might be younger than you, but she's gonna be a full-grown woman before you've even got hair on your chest, kid. Unfortunately, my comments didn't have the effect I wanted on the hedgehog boy, because he merely tilted his head to the side, stroked his bare chin, and mumbled something to himself. Then his eyes lit up with excitement, and he looked over at my daughter once more.
God damn it.
I was starting to think I was literally going to have to bring out the shotgun to keep this kid away.
Were you successful?
Awara's voice brought me back to the current situation.
In removing all of the deadly plants.
Didn't have to.
Alvi muttered as she walked past the rest of the group.
Everyone died.
Jesus. I trailed off. That was definitely a darker end than I'd been hoping for. Alvi, however, was about as nonchalant about it as one could possibly be. The brunette hedgehog woman of few words sauntered over to the shore of the underground lake, tossed her stick to the side, and then looked back at us over her shoulder.
It's in the past.
She shrugged.
No point dwelling on it now.
With that, Alvi turned away, clapped her hands together above her head, and jumped headfirst into the water. Her head popped back up through the surface a few seconds later, and it was now completely soaked in the pristine water. Much to my surprise, her hair still stood straight up above her head. Damn, these spiny hair things must have been made of something else.
What are you talking about, Alvi?
Shala scoffed.
We have to think about it.
I think about it every single day, wondering what would have happened if we'd realized our immunity sooner, or if that one man had never messed with the death spray in the first place.
That's why Alvi says not to dwell on it, Shala.
Pei sighed.
We can go over these scenarios in our head a million times over, but we cannot change the past. All we can do is move towards the future and hope we don't repeat the same mistakes.
It wasn't your fault,
Mira interjected.
Nobody could have known the kind of effects that plant would have on your lives.
Besides,
Owara added,
even if you'd never touched it, the plant would have eventually bloomed. The Spindrel people only sped up the process a bit. Still.
Pei sniffled.
I long for the time when all of our friends and family were still alive and well. Hey.
Theora murmured as she walked over and placed a hand on Pei's shoulder.
We've all been there, my dear. Most of my people were massacred by a bunch of ugly green pirates and their violent, hairy servants.
Same here.
Mira added.
The orcs swept into our island and killed off our men, sons, and water dragons.
That's what happened to us, too.
Nadir noted as she pointed between herself and Lazan.
All of our men and children completely wiped out by nasty green acorn orders.
At least your species were wiped out by known enemies.
Awara grumbled.
We were nearly killed by our own men.
My goodness.
Pei gasped.
Do you think any of these orcs you speak of would have business on our island?
They've definitely been here. When we were scoping out your island on the map we stole from them, the fuckers had written empty on it. I have no idea when they would have come here to explore, though.
If they thought the island was empty,
Ura noted,
it was probably after our species was nearly wiped out. We used to spend a lot more time above ground when it was safe. Wait.
Shala spoke up as her eyes narrowed, and her mouth furled into an angry scowl.
You don't think those orcs could have been the ones who brought the plants to our island?
My blood ran cold as I mulled over her words. Though I wasn't sure of the exact timeline, Shala's hypothesis would have made sense. Sure, plants and animals evolved into new forms all the time, especially in this sort of bizarre magical world, but these women claim they'd never seen anything like this plant before in their lives. That meant it very well could have been an invasive species, and the only way an invasive species could get here was by somebody else tracking it in. Like a group of outsiders who traveled around the different islands looking to rape and to plunder them of all their resources.
Ben?
Batari's voice cut through my thoughts.
Do you think there's some validity to Shala's claim?
I do, unfortunately. I sighed and hung my head. Fuck, I mean, I don't know for sure. I don't think we can ever know for sure, but it would line up.
Those emerald-colored glowworms!
Shala slammed her fist into her palm.
If I ever catch one of those guys on our island, I'm gonna knock them into the next season cycle, after I gut them with my staff and beat them raw with my fists!
Calm down, Shala.
Errol snatched up the short hedgehog woman in a tight embrace.
I know you're upset, but there's no point in making yourself even angrier.
Sure there is,
Shala protested.
Now we know who did this, and we can make them pay.
It's not that simple.
Mira frowned.
As much as I would love to do exactly what you described, the orcs have strength in numbers and resources. You know how your weapons are made from wood?
Ashanti reminded the hedgehog women.
Well, theirs are made from iron. Very hard material that can easily snap your weapons in half like a twig. Don't you have this iron, too?
Ura questioned.
During our battle, I saw all of your weapons were made from strange materials.
We don't have any iron mines. I shook my head. So anything we have of that material is made from stuff we stole from the orcs.
So what?
Errol scoffed.
We just sit around and hope these creatures never come to our island again? If we cannot fight them, we may as well remain in hiding.
We can fight them. That's why we came to your island in the first place. Morella had a vision of the dragon that stalks your land. You can see the future? Kaelan looked at Morella with eyes full of hope. What have you seen about mind? Do I end up with anybody in particular?
That's not how it works.
Morella scowled at the boy.
My visions only come to me when I meditate, or sometimes in a dream.
Dreaming about this guy would be more like a nightmare.
Jaren shuddered.
For example, just last night I had a vision that I had three new siblings on the way, all of the dragonkin variety. I haven't even told you about that yet, Dad.
The news made me blink in shock, though I guess I shouldn't have been surprised.
The twins.
Mira smirked as she turned to me.
Daria and Zarya must be pregnant, Ben.
Holy shit. I trailed off as my lips twisted into a goofy grin. I'm gonna be a father. Again.
What about the third child? Jonas asked. Is one of the twins going to bear twins as well? Well, I chuckled and rubbed the back of my neck. I'm guessing that would probably be Hallie's child.
Hallie is pregnant too,
Fiora gasped.
How did that happen?
Ugh, ew.
Morella gagged.
It better not have happened where she makes our food.
It didn't. But it did happen, and I'm sure she is the third pregnancy you saw, Morella.
Judging by the strength of your seed,
Lizanne chuckled.
She definitely is. I'm actually starting to think you can get people pregnant just by looking at them, Ben.
Wait.
Pei gasped.
Are all of you pregnant with the Draco Rex's children?
I'm not yet.
Ashanti raised her hand and shook her head.
Yet?
Pei opened her mouth wider.
Nor am I.
Awara added.
Though my own queen and another member of my people are, I do wish to become pregnant soon.
I have not bore a child for Ben yet, though that is of my own choice.
I'm obviously not either, Jonas interjected with a nervous chuckle. I'm not sure if you needed me to tell you that, though. Everyone in the room gave the soothsayer a confused look, and he instantly retreated into his own body with a cringe.
Don't feel embarrassed.
Pei laughed.
I'm not familiar with the way dragonkin biology works. For all I know, the males of your species could bear children.
That would still be highly unlikely,
Valea noted.
By definition, a creature with male anatomy wouldn't be able to bear children.
A creature with our species' male anatomy,
Ura reminded the naturalist.
We've never encountered anyone from outside the island.
Well, if the Draco Rex has the same anatomy we're familiar with,
Shala said,
then he'd better get to using it immediately. Our species is on the brink of extinction already.
Shala!
Pei hissed.
We just met this man. You're already asking him to father our children?
Typical Shala.
Alvi chuckled from the lake.
Already fantasizing about the man she just met. Don't act like you haven't been making the love eyes at him, too.
Shala scoffed.
I don't have love eyes.
The hedgehog woman in the lake snorted.
I'm not sure Alvi has any sort of emotion in her eyes.
Ura noted.
Other than perhaps simmering rage.
Don't let her fool you.
The dark-haired hedgehog woman said with a click of her tongue.
I've been close with Alvi long enough to know when she's interested in a man, and she's showing all the signs. None of that matters right now.
Pei sighed.
I know you're here for the dragon, but we simply cannot continue with this journey until we are rested and healed up. Valea, go and grab your special ointment.
Right away, Magnusdale.
Valea nodded before she turned away and dashed toward the staircase at the far left side of the cavern. This was the first time I'd noticed the giant stone structure, and I was taken aback by just how massive it really was. Its stairs were carved directly into the wall and stretched nearly up its entire length. There must have been a quarter mile between the first step and the platform at the top. There was a vast empty space in between the base of the stairs and where we currently stood. The Spindrel people may have created a breathtaking space, but it was far from the most convenient to navigate.
It should go without saying you are all welcome to stay here for as long as you need,
Pei explained.
You've done a great deed for us, my friends, and for that, we're forever in your gratitude.
I wouldn't thank us just yet. We're still asking you to bring us to a dragon, remember? There's still a lot of things that could go sideways.
That may be true,
the silver-haired woman shrugged.
But this is also a favor to us. This dragon of which you speak has caused us countless troubles over the last few weeks.
That thing has made it practically impossible to hunt,
Errol pouted.
Not only is it eating all the available creatures on the island, but it's also destroying entire patches of forest with its fire breath.
Then there's the fact it thinks we are also part of its diet,
Ura added.
We've had a face-to-face encounter with the beast twice, and both times we only barely escaped with our lives.
A sharpened stick isn't going to do much good against a dragon,
Nadir chuckled.
I could have told you that. Oh, I suppose your weapon, made of rock, fares much better?
Ura raised an eyebrow at the Kunag woman.
Not at all!
Nadir cackled without missing a beat.
The only way we found to truly fight a dragon is with another dragon, which is why we brought these guys along.
Even though these two were in the middle of their playful banter, I had other things on my mind. Where was the dragon, actually? Which one was it? We knew it was one of the larger ones, but which one? Would they even know how to describe it comparatively? All these thoughts raced through my head as we waited for Valea to return with her so-called magical ointment, and eventually I heard Tyrion and Swaer begin to stir.
He's waking up!
Batari gasped as she scratched her wind dragon on the chin. Sure enough, Swaer's tiny head lifted up from his bondmate's shoulder and looked around groggily.
His left whisker was matted down against his fur from where he'd laid on it, and his eyes blinked repeatedly as he surveyed the room.
Is this the underworld?
Suaer questioned through his exhausted fog.
Did the birds tear us to pieces?
Not a chance, buddy. I promised the Wind Dragon. Not while you were on the case.
We won, Suaer.
Batari smiled at her beloved dragon.
Thanks to your bravery, we won.
Oh.
Was the only response the tired little dragon could muster before he yawned and laid his head back down.
Yeah, that's good, I guess. Huh. Are we in the Spindrel Women's home now?
We sure are, my friend.
The Chera woman continued.
We're gonna rest up before we go back out to find the other dragon.
Oh, I see Tyrion's already got a fresh start on the restin'.
Suaer joked.
I'd be kind if I were you. If not for me, you would have been nothing but a splatter in the dirt.
It's true. Tyrion's the one who stopped you from falling back to Earth.
Oh, well then. I guess I need to thank you, Tyrion. And you too, Charon.
Oh, I didn't do much.
Charon chuckled.
I mostly just sprayed the birds with water.
Every bit counts. Go Team Dragon.
With that, the little red guy closed his eyes and slipped off into dreamland again. Meanwhile, Tyrion was becoming more lucid by the moment. The silver dragon raised his head up, scanned his surroundings, and let out a long, deep chuff.
Whew. I didn't mean to pass out like that, Ben. I thought I had it under control. But I must have inhaled some of the sleeping powder when I opened my mouth to grab Suaer.
I don't care what happened, I reassured the fire breather. All that matters is you saved Suaer, and we defeated those nasty-ass birds. I think that earns you guys a full boar when you get back to the island.
See?
Tyrion looked over at Charon and smiled.
That is a very good reason I continue to volunteer for these journeys.
Tyrion then let out a long sigh as he laid his head back onto the ground, curled up like a sleeping cat, and closed his eyes.
The powder is going to take a little bit to wear off,
Pei explained.
Especially with the amount they ingested. In the meantime, follow me to the healing room.
What about them?
Batari asked, as she motioned to Charon and Tyrion.
I'm not quite sure if those stairs will hold them.
They'll have to stay behind, unfortunately.
The silver-haired hedgehog woman sighed.
They'll be safe out here, though, I promise.
What about my Mirak?
Ashanti asked, as she patted her oversized aunt on the head.
He's a bit hefty, too.
He can stay with the dragons.
Pei confirmed.
I'm sure he needs just as much rest as they do.
I'll keep watch on them.
Alvi offered.
I'll be in the lake for a bit, anyways.
With that, Pei motioned for us to follow her to the stairs. The journey to the frickin' staircase by itself took nearly 10 minutes, and by the time we got there, my legs were starting to ache. My crewmates also seemed to grumble as they stared up at the long, winding pathway of stairs before us. Well, everybody except for Awara. The butterfly woman simply chuckled as she opened up her pink wings, flapped them gently, and rose into the air.
I'll meet you all at the top.
She winked, and then she zipped up the stairs at the speed of light.
Remind me to slap Al when they get up there,
Mira grumbled.
If I even have the energy. Race you guys to the top!
Nadir cackled, and then she and Lazan dropped down onto their hands and knees before they darted up the staircase on all fours. Their tails were parallel to the ground as they ran, most likely to make them more aerodynamic. The rest of us slogged up the stairs right behind them, but we did so with much less enthusiasm or energy. Of course, the Kunag women's energy didn't last long either. By the time they were halfway up the stairs, both Lazan and Nadir stopped and collapsed onto their bellies, and they were still lying there, completely out of breath, when we finally caught up to them.
Why are there so many stairs?
Nadir panted.
Couldn't you people have made a more direct route?
Lazan pleaded.
I think I'm about to pass out.
Do you want us to carry you?
Shala asked with a raised eyebrow.
No!
Nadir spat as she leapt to her feet. But her pregnant belly seemed to throw off her equilibrium because she swayed for a moment before she regained her balance.
I'm perfectly capable of doing it on my own. Just give me a few minutes.
Suit yourself.
The curvy hedgehog woman shrugged and then strutted off with a giggle. Eventually, our crew reached the end of the line and funneled out onto the main level of the Spindrel's home. And now that we were up high, I could truly appreciate the beauty of this place. The waterfall roared loudly behind us as it cascaded down into the lake and nearly 200 feet below us. Tyrion, Charon, and Ashanti's Mirak appeared as small figures from this height, while Alvi was basically the size of an ant. Pei motioned for us to follow her a few more steps, and then finally stopped at one of the doors carved in the wall.
This is where Valea will heal us,
the Magnus Dew announced.
Afterwards, you may stay in any open room you find.
We've got plenty of them.
Ura half chuckled, half sighed.
Nobody else is putting them to use, anyway.
We passed through the threshold of the doorway to find a large, mostly open room filled with several makeshift hospital beds. And upon closer inspection, I noticed the beds were simply large mounds of dirt and stocky green material covered with a massive luminous plant leaf. Oh well, if they were at least semi-comfortable, I really didn't give a damn what they were made out of. My feet and legs were aching from the long hike and the two battles we'd been in since we had arrived on this island, and all I wanted was to sit down and take a load off. I wandered over to the nearest bed, laid down on my back, and let out a long, satisfied sigh. These things were actually pretty frickin' comfortable. Sure, it wasn't memory foam, but it was way better than sleeping in the bare dirt or on a tree branch somewhere. My friends all followed suit, and soon Valea appeared through the door with a large stone container in her hands.
Who's ready to feel a million times better?
The naturalist announced.
This stuff is made from a mixture of luminosap, a bit of bogworm saliva, and ground-up nare plant seeds mixed together with the oil from the luminos.
As long as it makes us feel better, I'll lay it on me.
I watched as, one by one, Valea went around to everybody and spread the ointment on their wounds. She rubbed it into every cut and bruise she could find, and the whole process seemed to take longer than expected. When Valea finally got to me, her warm, tender hands pressed against the bruise on my left arm, and I nearly moaned with satisfaction. The ointment was warm and somewhat slick, as if somebody had just spread olive oil onto my arm. But once it began to soak into my skin, the dull throbbing of my arm evaporated in an instant. Oh, wow, Valea. This stuff really is working miracles.
Not quite.
The blonde woman giggled.
At the moment, it's just making you feel better. The actual healing process won't begin for at least another hour.
Valea continued to rub the ointment all over my body, until it felt like my very being existed on pins and needles. I closed my eyes as the delicate, soothing sensation washed over me, and then the process was done.
This is most definitely better than the mud pits back home, Ashanti.
Batari practically moaned.
Better?
Ashanti scoffed.
This makes the mud pits look like scudoar dung.
I'm all done now,
Valea explained, as she walked back over to the door.
The effects of the ointment will keep going for a few more hours, so I'd recommend you go and do something relaxing, like swim in the lake or take a nap or meditate.
Oh. Jonas hummed as he turned to our other resident soothsayer.
Marella, do you think that's a good idea?
Are you kidding me?
My daughter chuckled to her great-grandfather.
If we meditate in this state, I don't think I'll ever want to stop.
I'll take that as a yes, then.
The elder soothsayer laughed.
Can you teach me how to meditate, too?
Kaylon interjected awkwardly.
I've always been into the spiritual stuff, but we don't have anyone who really meditates around here. Other than Valea, but she's really secretive about that sort of stuff.
I'm afraid this session is reserved for soothsayers only, Jonas noted with a sly wink to his great-granddaughter. Should you develop the ability of foresight in the meantime, please come and see us.
I watched as Marella mouthed,
"Thank you,"
to Jonas, and then the two rolled up from their tables and headed out the door.
I don't know about the rest of you,
Theora announced,
but I'm perfectly satisfied staying right here. You can say that again.
Mira agreed.
This is euphoric. Actually,
Shala noted as she rolled off her table.
Errol and I wanted to see if we could borrow the Draco Rex for a moment. We wanted to pick his brain about battle strategies and, stuff.
Shala.
Pei huffed.
We just got out of a battle. I'm not sure the Draco Rex is going to want to jump right back into that. Oh, come on.
Shala pleaded as she gave me a seductive glance.
I promise it'll be worth his while.
I could sense by the tone in her voice what she was getting at. This woman had been hitting on me aggressively since we'd met, and now she wanted to get me alone? With another beautiful hedgehog woman to boot? I'd have to be an idiot to let this opportunity walk away. It's fine, Pei. I lied to the Magnus Due. Luckily for these two, I love talking about battle strategies. I've always found it relaxing. Shala and Errol exchanged a very excited look before they glanced back at me and grinned from ear to ear. I stood up from my chair, walked over to their position, and then gave everybody a parting wave before I headed out. Both of the hedgehog women wrapped onto my arms in an instant, and my heart beat rapidly in my chest. If this was headed where I thought it was, I was in for a very, very relaxing night.